listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, that man with the golden pipes. When I grow up, I want to be him. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. We're 15 minutes. Could save you 15% or more on car insurance. So go to geico.com for a free rate quote. This is the weekend edition of Straight Out of Vegas, and I'm joined in studio by the one and only Steve Fezzik, the only two-time winner of the prestigious Hilton Now Westgate Super Contest. And Fez, I'll say it again. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Sports are the greatest reality show in existence, and you can script everything but the ending. You don't believe me? Well, just ask Bill Belichick. Just ask John Harbaugh. You know, maybe Hollywood will start filming a new sequel to Remember the Titans. We'll call them Remember the Tennessee Titans. But I digress. Tonight, we've got a cornucopia of football stuff to get to, and we're going to get to it right now. So put your seat backs forward and your tray tables upright. We are ready for takeoff, as they say in Proctor, Minnesota. It's going to be lit. This is Straight Out of Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. Fez, all right, San Francisco and Tennessee advance. Minnesota and Baltimore, they get the home version of the game and a year's supply of Eskimo pie. Let's chop it up. What did we learn? I will say this. So much for certain trends. Did you know, Fez, and I'm referring to Tennessee here, teams who beat the Super Bowl champion in the wild card round, which Tennessee did, they beat New England last week, the following week in the divisional round before today, 1-13 against the spread, 2-12 straight up. The Ravens and their fifth-ranked defense and number one rushing attack, they get to go home and enjoy the rest of the winter. Tennessee now 8-0 when Derrick Henry rushes for 100 yards. And Mike Vrabel's now cracked the code against New England, and he's cracked the code against Baltimore. The last time a number six seed beat a number one seed, Rex Ryan and the New York Jets back in 2010 beat the Patriots. Fez, thoughts?
This is a shocking result, Bernie, because think about it. This Ravens team, how good are they? Well, obviously everyone's saying right now they're overrated. But going into the playoffs, the Ravens were my highest rated team I've had during the past 5 years. Now, I was a little concerned about the playoff experience. Lamar Jackson, only his second playoff game. But this team had been clicking on all cylinders.
Oh, my goodness.
Coming in this game, I mean, 12 straight wins, 10-0 straight up, 9-1 against the spread. The last 10 games, that defense, since they got Peter, since they got Jimmy Smith at cornerback, had been playing so phenomenally well. And I got to tell you, I think sometimes you're coasting along, and then you get that Week 17 game, and you rest some guys, and it essentially becomes a bye, and then you get that second bye, and all of a sudden the rust hits, and that offense just was not itself in the first half.
It's clear. They never really got their footing, and this is a team, you talk about the superlatives that they had achieved to this point. I was on with Arnie and Aaron, my weekly spot at 1020, and we talked about the Houston Texans, who we'll get to later in the show as they visit Kansas City tomorrow, the only team in this tournament who had a point differential in the negative, -7, Houston. Baltimore was the number one team, +249. I believe that the meeting day, Baltimore scored 249 more points than their opponents in over a 16-week season. Do the math.
Yeah, so that's 15 and a half extra
points. Two touchdowns a game.
Per game. So think about that. If you have the best team in the league playing the worst team in the league, what's the point spread on a neutral? Oh, it's about 15. So basically, Baltimore made the rest of the league look like the worst team in the league all year long on average. And yet, one game and you're out. I got to tell you, I want to talk turnovers. Because
absolutely.
We talk about how important turnovers are. Obviously, Tennessee won the turnover battle 3-0. That was a big part of this game. I want to make the case that the turnovers were 7-0, and here's why. Baltimore went for it four times on fourth down. They missed them all, 0-for-4. And what's shocking, and I think hats off to Vrabel and that defense, the fact that Baltimore was the number one team in the NFL in terms of fourth down conversion rate at over 70%, and yet they came up empty four straight times on fourth down.
You know, this last Wednesday, January 8th, was the 20th anniversary of the Music City Miracle. And believe me, I know, because I was on Buffalo. I was on the wrong side that day. And all of a sudden, this Tennessee team, they're reminding me of that team of destiny. That, no, they lost to the Rams in the greatest show on turf, but they're a 9-7 team. This team has Derrick Henry. That team had Eddie George. This team has Ryan Tannehill. That team had Steve McNair. Very similar styles. This team has Mike Vrabel, a player for the Patriots on defensive-led Super Bowl teams. That team had Jeff Fisher, who played for the 85 Bears. All I can say is to the guy on the radio who said this week, New England or Tennessee is so excited, there's going to be a letdown when they go to Baltimore because they've already knocked off the world champs and Vrabel beat his old team. So, cool, there's going to be a letdown. Going to tell you, pal, you're as wrong as rain on a wedding day. You were wrong. Now, let's have a little fun before we move on. One last thing, Fez. I want to give you top credit because 4 weeks ago, you boldly said on this show, Kansas City's going to the Super Bowl. And I'll tell you, with New England out of the tournament now and Baltimore out of the tournament, Kansas City's not going to have to leave home. Well, and we're going to get to that game later, Kansas City and Houston. Let's have a little fun, though. Tennessee, let's assume, all right, you know how they say you never should assume because it makes something out of you and me. But let's assume for fun, Kansas City wins tomorrow. They'll be an 8-point favorite next week at home against Tennessee.
Let me caveat. That's my number, -8. So we're not sure they're going to be an 8-point.
Oh, you know they're going to. Well, what would? Well, Baltimore was 10.
Right. So that. So I made my initial number. So I hate to say that they'll be that.
All right.
No, approximately. Fair enough. That's what our initial send out.
I didn't run it by legal first. So thank you. Well, will you take? Is there any chance you would consider backing Tennessee next week?
Zero. And here's why. There's two things I'm concerned big time about Tennessee. Fourth straight road game. So I know it's been a really great run, but at Houston to end the season, must win game to make the playoffs. Then they go at New England, at Baltimore, big upsets, and then having to travel to Kansas City would be extremely difficult. And Derrick Henry, three straight games now that he's carried the ball more than 30 times. This is unprecedented.
He's just getting warmed up, dude.
You know, we've done
that some, guy's a runaway Coke machine. He's the man.
Well, we've done some research about every other man. And this is
a
McKenzie.
Well, he's not a man, actually. This guy's Superman.
Research. It turns out that when backs carry the ball over a three-game period 70 or more times, their production drops precipitously by 1 yard per carry. So Derrick Henry, he hasn't gotten 70 carries. He's gotten just under 100. I'm sorry. He's gotten, just under 100 carries the last three games. So he is just absolutely in unprecedented territory. And I expect he's going to come back down and no longer be Superman.
I would say this, Tennessee now 8-0, and Derrick Henry rushes for 100 yards. So even if he gets less carries next week, if he rushes for 100 yards, that seems to be their modus operandi. I mean, today their key for me that I'd written down was run Derrick Henry, control the clock, et cetera, shorten the game. They did that and more. They forced turnovers as well, and I joke with Arnie and Aaron. I said, all of a sudden, Tennessee's got this weird vibe where they're turning all the dials right, and it's not just Derrick Henry. They're clicking on all three phases, and I joked through an analogy about the movie Jurassic Park. Tennessee and Mike Vrabel are starting to remind me of that scene in Jurassic Park where the two kids were hiding in a kitchen from the Velociraptors behind a stained glass door, and they slammed the door shut, and they could hear the raptor on the outside, and they look at each other and say, well, these dinosaurs are dangerous, but they don't know how to open a door handle, do they? And the next thing, the camera pans down, and you see the handle moving, and you have that sinking feeling. That reminds me of Tennessee.
And one final note on this game, Tannehill. I got to talk about him in this day and age where you need a great quarterback to make the Super Bowl. How is this possible? Tannehill, his last two games, has thrown for 88 yards and 72 yards. So ground and pound.
Not unprecedented. That happened with Miami in 73. They went to the Super Bowl. And Pittsburgh in 75 went to the Super Bowl. Not unprecedented.
73, that's like Jurassic age.
They lost to the Redskins. Yeah.
Dinosaur example. That was so long ago.
I don't know. I wasn't born yet. I read about it in all the papers. All right, let's move along. Minnesota, San Francisco. A game pretty evenly bet. Again, a number one seed versus a number six seed. Only this time, San Francisco had their way. Look, the key to this game was simple. And by the way, I did bet San Fran and lay the wood. And I'll tell you why. I did not think the Vikings, and I was secretly rooting for the Vikings. I just would have liked to have seen them get to the Super Bowl. I don't know if you saw 92-year-old Bud Grant interviewed on TV. Looks great, by the way. Looks like he could probably still coach. I just felt that Minnesota's offensive line just simply would not be able to handle the best defensive front in all of football, and that would be the 49ers. I saw a stat this week that knocked me over, Fez. for the 49ers when Dee Ford and Nick Bosa are on the field at the same time. They combined for 24 sacks in 164 snaps. Are you kidding me? When only one of them was on the field, they combined for 24 sacks in 845 snaps. The moral of the story is it worked out for the Niners. I believe they sacked Kirk Cousins at least six times today. But give it up to Jimmy G in his playoff debut. He defied the odds. Prior to today, quarterbacks making their playoff debut, 15-32 straight up, 11-34 against the spread. And I'll just say one thing. Even though Jimmy G didn't throw for a lot of yards, you knew Minnesota was worried going into this game because what have you always said, Fez? Their defensive secondary was their Achilles heel. Was that not their Damocles, the defensive secondary? Here's case in point. The Vikings are so short on defensive backs, so desperate for defensive backs, they actually worked out Newman this week. Now, I'm not talking about Newman from Seinfeld.
But Newman.
Oh, hello, Newman. They brought in Terrence Newman, 41-year-old Terrence Newman, who hasn't played in 3 years. Spoiler alert, he didn't play today either.
Yeah, you nailed it. The San Francisco defense was really the star of this game, and that's a defense that was stellar. The first seven games of the year, they're giving up 11 points per game, and then what happened? Well, their middle linebacker, Quan Alexander, got injured, and he's been out the rest of the regular season.
Right.
D-Point got hurt in middle of November. He's been out the rest of the regular season, and they had other defensive line injuries. So they get back Quan Alexander. They get back Dee Ford. And here's something that no one was talking about and I think really helped the 49ers. We talk about oftentimes you get that rust if you got an extra week off. But San Francisco, they played hard week 17, and they have not had a bye since week 4. And that defense was leaking oil, and I think this was a tired team because every other playoff team in the NFL had their bye week 8 or later. The fact that the 49ers had to have it week 4, no team needed a bye more than the 49ers. That defense looked fresh, and I got to give them credit. Not only do they completely stop the Vikings, I don't know if you saw the end of the game.
Saw the whole game.
Breida fumbles with a minute and a half to go, and they give the Vikings one more chance to score, and it doesn't mean anything. There's a 17-point difference. We'll just sack Cousins again, stop them again. So that defense really played tremendously.
One of the reasons I backed the Niners today, in addition to it was a really tough travel spot, I think, for Minnesota. Go to New Orleans last week, have a sensational win. Then you get on the road, go to San Francisco. They're what I call a hothouse team. And let's face it, dome teams, they have a hard time outside. 2-4 straight up, 2-4 against the spread, the Vikings this year, in outside games. That was just this year. And we haven't even mentioned other players on San Francisco's defense, like Richard Sherman, who's completely rejuvenated his career. And we're talking about Nick Bosa and Dee Ford. How about Eric Armstead, who also was part of that sack machine? Look, Kirk Cousins scored a major win last Sunday. Could he do it again this week against a better defense outdoors? Nope, he couldn't. Good year for the Vikings, not a great year. Right now, the San Francisco 49ers look like they're checking all the boxes. Next week, Fez, go ahead and give the lines for next week because they could host one or two teams.
Yeah, so if San Francisco is hosting Green Bay, I make the Niners an 8-point favorite. If it's Seattle, Niners -9.
Bet you forgot, Fez. Monday night, there's a little college football game in New Orleans stacking up to being one of the great pros versus Joes lopsided betting games of all time. And that is not hyperbole. And we've still got to get to Houston, Kansas City, and Seattle, Green Bay. Like I said, it's a cornucopia. Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn at the end of your first year automatically, with no limit to how much will match. Millions of people a year are getting their cash back matched. Discover Cashback Match. What are you waiting for? Learn more at discover.com/cashback match. He is Steve Fezzik. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios, and this is the pregame show you always wanted. So don't go away. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas.
Straight Outta Vegas!
We are back on Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. I'm Bernie Fratto, coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. And what does it mean when Geico says just 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance? It means you probably should have gone to geico.com 15 minutes ago. Fez, finally, Monday night, Clemson, LSU. It's in all the papers. The line I've seen has been LSU minus 5.5, minus 6, touch 6.5 at Golden Nugget. This is sizing up to be the heaviest bet college football game of all time, and that's not hyperbole. And it's also shaping up to be not only incredibly lopsided action, but a clear classic pros versus Joes game. About 85% of the money is on LSU. There have been some very substantial bets out there. One particular bettor at CG Technology put $200,000 on LSU in two separate bets. There have been other large bets, William Hill, South Point. You brought up a great point before the show, before we get into the actual handicap and some of the factors in this game that led me to grab Clemson plus the points. Talk about your theory off that we talked about off air that's really kind of cool.
Yeah, it's, I call it the rule of two theory, and it's actually RJ Bell's theory, but I'm stealing it because RJ is not in on Saturday night, and it really is a great theory. So what the theory says, take a look at a spread, and oftentimes you can pick the winner just by adding to and subtracting to from a spread. So right now, LSU is laying 5.5 against Clemson. If we took 2 points off that and asked ourselves, LSU minus 3.5 against Clemson, who do we like? Mm-hmm. If we hadn't been following this at all. And you know what? I think if I would have asked a bunch of national media people and sports bettors, hey, LSU is laying 3.5. What do you think? I think I get pretty split opinion, 50-50 in terms of who they would like. However, if I added 2 to the current spread of 5.5 and I make it 7.5 and I asked everyone, who do you like? Clemson's catching 7.5. I think universally we would be rushing to
Goodness. Just think about that.
There'd be a tsunami of money. I get Dabo Swinney in 7.5. The guy is tremendous in these big games and as an underdog. So if 7.5 is a clear take to Clemson and 3.5 we're indifferent on, that means we got to go ahead and bet Clemson plus the 5.5 or plus the 6.
All right, so you've nailed the technical factors in the handicap. Let's talk about some of the fundamental factors. Trevor Lawrence has not thrown an interception. He's the quarterback for Clemson, in case you didn't know that. Since October 19th, Travis Etienne, their running back for Clemson, leads the nation in yards after contact. Clemson's offensive line, which is the highest-rated group in efficiency, person analytics group, limited Ohio State's Chase Young to just 1 solo tackle and 0 sacks. You know, Fez, a number one seed in this format has never won this tournament or won the championship. All right, these are some other factoids that led me to get on Clemson. Brent Venables and that SEC quality defense, they've been a juggernaut. They have held their foes this season in every game except one to season-low yards, which means they're ranked number one nationally in yards allowed and yards per pass allowed at 5.5 per game versus LSU, who's almost 11 yards per game in a 56-ranked pass defense. Let's talk about Dabo Swinney. This is where these guys live in the moment. I mean, my goodness. Dabo Swinney in his career at Clemson has only been a dog 19 times in, 7, 8 years? He's 14-5 against the spread as a dog, including 8-1 against the spread versus undefeated foes, 5-2 against the number versus SEC foes, including as a dog against the SEC. Dabo Swinney is 3-0. And considering, Fez, that the dog is 5-0 against the spread all time in the college football championship playoff game, and oh, by the way, juxtapose that against the fact that the FCC is only 2-3 straight up and 1-4 against the spread in the title contest, I am backing the Clemson Tigers.
Yeah, I agree. And let's talk about Clemson. Let's talk about Ohio State. And let's talk about LSU, because all the wise guys that make power ratings universally had these as the three best teams in the country. And frankly, they had LSU number 3 going into the Final Four. Now, LSU gets to play a game in their home state, so that's worth up to 2 points. Certainly, it's not a non-factor. But the bottom line is, what happened is that Clemson had to play Ohio State. So, of course, whoever won that game was not going to look all that impressive. It was a war.
And oh, my goodness.
It really was, like I said, by the wise guy's power ratings, it was 1-2. And the fact that Oklahoma got dealt to LSU, LSU benefited greatly. And they were super impressive the way they dismissed Oklahoma. But this line is an overreaction. And my best evidence of it is that when the Final Four theoretical matchups were put up and this game was put up, the line was pick 'em. So does that impressive win by LSU versus Oklahoma, is that worth 6 points to the line? I say no. I'm taking the points.
People, as you know, have a tendency to bet what they saw last. So to your point, Clemson looked vulnerable against Ohio State. One could say it looked like they slept, you know, sleptwalk through the first half. They were down 17-0. It looked like Trevor Lawrence might have almost been knocked out of the game. Then they rallied from the dead, and you saw what happened. Now, look, to be fair, for every outstanding Clemson stat we can throw out an equally impressive LSU number that can be used to counter the argument, even though I can't get my mind around Clemson getting 6 points. But look, Joe Burrow not only won the Heisman, but he turned in one of the best statistical seasons ever for a quarterback. Burrow's level of execution is even more impressive considering he faced 4 top 10 defenses, and he made pretty much quick work out of all of them. Now, Clemson's offense gets a lot of attention in the spotlight, but I want to reiterate that, in fact, it was really their defense that was the MVP against Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl. They not only limited the Buckeyes to a 34% success rate, and you can explain to the folks what success rate means, but after this, I think the first quarter, the Buckeyes only crossed the 40-yard line 3 times. And look, the bottom line is both these teams deserve to play in the national title game, but there's something about defensive coordinator Brent Venables. I just think he's a guy, and he's proven over 5 years, he's a defensive coordinator for Clemson. He will somehow figure out a way, and they've had, about 3-4 months now to prepare for the game, to disrupt the schemes of past game coordinator Joe Brady. So think about that matchup. We talk about Sweeney versus Ed Orgeron. How about defensive coordinator Brent Venables versus past game coordinator for LSU, Joe Brady, and their offensive coordinator, Steve Ensinger? The bottom line is Dave Aranda, the LSU defensive coordinator, also give him credit, has done a remarkable job in the last 5 games, and he's going to have a challenge against the Clemson defense. But I still believe Clemson has the better defense, and that will be the edge.
Yeah, and I don't want to say that I haven't seen Joe Burrow and what he's been able to do. And I got to tell you, Bernie, he throws the greatest ball. What he has done this year is just absolutely incredible. So I get it that I'm going up against a super hot quarterback, and Joe Burrow could win this game by himself. It's certainly possible. Yep.
Well, you're spot on about Joe Burrow. He's got superb footwork. He keeps his eyes downfield, keeps plays open with his legs, or alive with his legs. And the best thing about it, as you said, he's super accurate, drops dimes, and he is, you know, he'll be the number one draft choice, and it's just the way it fell with Cincinnati.
If you do bet this game and you bet the underdog, do not bet the money line, because what's happening here is you're getting a similar circumstance as you see in the Super Bowl, where there's a lot of recreational money, so the people who are betting on the underdog are betting the underdog to win outright. Normally, when there's a 6-point underdog, you would get like plus 220 on the money line. Here, you're only getting plus 180, so you're getting shorted on the price on the underdog. If you bet Clemson, take the plus 6. If you like LSU, I would wait and I would bet the money line on LSU, because you're only going to have to lay like minus 200, which is a very cheap money line for a 5.5 to 6-point favorite.
There's a top tip from a professional bettor. That's Mr. Steve Fezzik. We've still got to get to Houston, Kansas City, Seattle, Green Bay, and best bets. Lots to get to. But first, let's go to the man. Well, he once spent an evening with Don King, and yes, it was a hair-raising experience.
Oh, wow. I don't know how I could ever top that, but you were in Vegas, Bernie, so you would know Don King better than me. Lamar Jackson marvels in the regular season and implodes in the playoffs.
Blitz coming. Jackson firing. Intercepted. Vaccaro picks it off in front of Boykin. And the Titans get their third takeaway of the night.
That is the great Mike Keith on the Titans radio network. Jackson, 3 turnovers as the Ravens faceplant to the Titans, 28-12. Jackson is now 0-2 in the postseason, and he is 19-3 in the regular season. And that Tennessee miracle run will continue as they await Sunday's winner between the Chiefs and the Texans. Earlier in the NFC divisional round, the 49ers defense manipulates and manhandles the Vikings 27-10. San Francisco sacked Kirk Cousins 6 times, and Minnesota head coach Mike Zimmer after the game with his patented raspy voice hailing that Niners D.
It's all cliche, but I think, you know, they played very well. I thought they got off blocks well. I thought they did a nice job of disrupting the passing game as well. And so, you know, I think that all those entered into it.
San Francisco will host the winner of Sunday's Seahawks-Packers game. And in the NBA, the Bucks take down the Trailblazers 122-101. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 32 points, 17 rebounds. Milwaukee, 35-6 on the season. They are well on their way in terms of first place in the Eastern Conference with a 6.5-game lead. LeBron James, Anthony Davis both sitting out. The Lakers win regardless and extend their winning streak to 8 games after taking the Thunder to a 125-110 defeat. Kyle Kuzma, 36 points. And the Cavs win over the Nuggets, 111-103. Back to Bernie Fratto and the Straight Out of Vegas crew in the Geico Fox Sports Studios.
All right, Brian, you got any thoughts on Clemson LSU? Who do you like?
Who do I like? I would have to go with Clemson here. They've been here before. Like you said, Bernie, I just put some stake in teams that have experience in said games, and that's something that right now LSU can't duplicate.
I'm with you. Look, one more thing, Fez, before we get back to the NFL. Trevor Lawrence is 25-0 as a starter. He's not throwing a pick in 200 straight passes. In fact, and this is a national championship team last year, Clemson's the only team in the last decade to return a 3,000-yard passer, a 15-yard rusher, and a 1,000-yard receiver. Other than that, not much firepower. I'm on Clemson +6. Are you involved in this game?
Yeah, I took the dog +6, and one prop bet I'll throw out there. I'm going to bet the second half will have more scoring than the first half. Similar situation. I bet this in the Super Bowl almost every year with the extra time off. The teams oftentimes come out tight, and they come out with rust in the first half.
All right, good stuff. Let's move to Kansas City, Fez, where they'll host the Houston Texans, the upstart Houston Texans, who actually beat the Chiefs in Kansas City back in week 6 by a score of 31-24. But as we talked about off air, Fez, and by the way, tomorrow, about 64% of the tickets are on the Kansas City Chiefs. On the face of it, and we'll break this down, Fez, I got to be honest, this game looks like a real mismatch to me, frankly. Houston, they did manage to advance, but they were luckier than Jussie Smollett's legal team last week. I think Kansas City rules them tomorrow.
Got to look up who this Jussie Smollett is then. That's
Jussie Smollett.
All right, I'll take your word for it. Houston is overrated. 9-3 in close games this year. Think about this. If they'd just been 6-6 like they should have been, because when a game's close, either team can win, Houston would be a 500 team, and they would be out of the playoffs. I don't know if their number two wide receiver, Will Fuller, is going to play. It looks like he's going to go ahead and make a go of it, but he's not going to be 100%. He's been really important when he is not played. Watson's numbers drop precipitously off from being an elite quarterback to being one of the worst quarterbacks in the league. So without a healthy Fuller, that's an issue. And also, Houston's O-line's banged up. Larry Tunsil, ankle injury. He gutted it out last week. He graded out as having his worst game of the year last week. So Tunsil clearly not 100%. Not a good sign, because the book on Houston is, how do you beat them? You get pressure on Watson, and that Kansas City defense is going to be able to get that pressure, I believe.
Texans 4-7 against the spread, Fez, in their last 11 games. And on the road this year, 3-3 straight up, 4-2 against the spread. As a road underdog, I just feel the Chiefs, Fez, have the edge in every category. They've got the edge in coaching experience, starting quarterback, more wide receiver depth, a better defense, an improved defense, better running backs. I feel the Chiefs check every box. And you know, Fez, in the history of the NFL, when a division round team has a point differential deficit, of which the Texans do, they're 0-7 straight up, 1-6 against the number. This is a leaky secondary that the Texans feature when it comes to pass yards per game allowed, pass touchdowns allowed, and passer rating allowed. Cumulatively throughout the whole season, they rank 29th, 27th, and 25th. I've got to believe Patrick Mahomes is licking his chops. Add to that, by the way, that Kansas City has not only had 2 weeks to prepare, but to your point, I want to let everybody know, our 42 million listeners, 4 weeks ago, Fez said, Kansas City is going to the Super Bowl, no uncertain terms. And since that time, by the way, their defense, since week 13, points per game allowed 10.4, first in the league.
Yeah, and let me explain why Kansas City is so undervalued and why they're going to the Super Bowl.
And yards per game allowed, or yards per play, excuse me, 4.7. That's good for fifth. Red zone touchdown percentage allowed, 38%. That's fourth. I got to tell you, add that to a frisky Kansas City offense, makes for a nice combination.
Boy, we're both so excited to talk about Kansas City. I'm stepping all over your outstanding information. And bottom line is, defensive coordinator Spagnuolo took over for Kansas City.
Right.
Took a while for this to take place. So the Kansas City defense is underrated because they've gotten so much better over the last 6 weeks. And the Kansas City offense is also underrated. Why? Because Mahomes missed three games. Matt Moore had to fill in.
Right.
And there were three games Mahomes played with a bad ankle injury and with the kneecap injury where it was not 100%. So I'm going to make the case Kansas City is not 12-4. Kansas City is 10-0. They're 4-0 to start the season, including a win against Baltimore, and they're 6-0 to end the year. And I don't care that Matt Moore lost a shootout to Green Bay, and I don't worry that much that they lost home games against Indy and Houston because Mahomes got his ankle stomped
right
on. And even the loss against Tennessee, if you recall, that was a crazy game. They had a 98% chance, Kansas City did, of winning that game, and somehow they lost it. Well, as it turns out, maybe a loss at Tennessee, not as bad as we thought.
Now, we talk about not overreacting to what we saw last week, but Fez, I'm going to make a bit of an exception here, and I'll tell you why. Go back to last week. Houston didn't show up for 2.5 quarters. And I feel they're really lucky to be here. With 6 minutes to go in the third quarter last week, they were getting shut out and had 92 yards of offense. They cannot afford to dig a hole like that against Kansas City. And even if they don't dig a hole, I don't think it's going to matter. I think Kansas City hangs this number, and I will be on the Chiefs tomorrow.
I am on the Chiefs as well. We have a consensus. We're with the public. But you know what, Bernie? Sometimes the public gets it right on games, and I
sure
think they have it right on this one.
Absolutely. He's Steve Fezzik. I'm Bernie Fratto. We come back. We've got Seattle Green Bay to break down and best bets. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios, and this is the pregame show you always wanted. So don't go away. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas.
Straight Outta Vegas!
Back on Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. I'm Bernie Fratto, coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. And I want to remind you folks that Straight Outta Vegas is brought to you by Discover. Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all of the cash back you earn at the end of your first year automatically, with no limit as to how much will match. Millions of people a year are getting their cash back matched. Discover, cash back match. What are you waiting for? Learn more at discover.com/cashback match. Before I go any further, I want to thank our broadcast team back in Los Angeles, Chris Perfett, Brian Finley, Eric Roberts, turning all the dials, keeping us glued together so that we can deliver this fine product to a grateful nation. Fez, Seattle, Green Bay, here we go. This should be a good one tomorrow. It's the final of the four divisional games, currently Green Bay -4. 63% of the money on the Seahawks. Kind of an interesting dynamic here. And by the way, you want to pay close attention to Fez's analysis. He's got two good prop bets as part of his best bets for tomorrow. We'll give those at the end of the show. Russell Wilson, only 0-3 career-wise at Lambeau Field, but the Packers, only 5-5 in their last 10 playoff games. Meanwhile, this year, Russell Wilson, 8-1 on the road, 6-2-1 against the spread on the road. The real question is, Fez, are you sold on the 13-3 Green Bay Packers? And I'll tell you why I say that, because this game comes down to a simple analysis for me. Can Seattle's Wagner and Wright neutralize Aaron Jones and make Green Bay's offense one-dimensional? Here's what I mean by that. In Green Bay's three losses this year, what was the common denominator? Aaron Jones was not a factor. So if Seattle can neutralize him, does Green Bay have the weapons to complement Aaron Rodgers?
I believe that they do. And one thing about Green Bay that a lot of people haven't been paying much attention to, they've really been compromised at wide receiver. Their number one wide receiver, Devontae Adams, has not been healthy for most of the year. He missed four games in October. Wasn't very good. November, beginning of December, averaged under 50 yards per game. Adams is finally 100%, so Aaron Rodgers doesn't have to throw to Lazar, and so he's got some passing targets or one specific target that he can go to. The last three games for Adams, 103 yards, 116, and 93. This is my first of my prop bets. Best bet here, I'm going Adams over 83 reception yards, and this is a case where the pass may well set up the run for Green Bay. I expect Adams to have a big game. I bet him over receiving yards.
No, just a quick non sequitur on that. There is some weather hitting Green Bay today, and there's going to be snow today. There was snow today enough to where the Packers have invited, I think, up to 700 people to be at Lambeau Field tomorrow at 6 a.m. You can shovel snow and even earn $12 an hour. How about that?
Seemingly, it seems to snow every day in Green Bay because it's supposed to snow Sunday night as well. So check the forecast on this because at some point Sunday night it's going to start snowing again.
Well, this game kicks off at 6:40 Eastern time.
Yes, and during the day the weather should be fine. There's not going to be a lot of wind. And frankly, little snow does not bother me in the passing game at all.
Now, Seattle's not without challenges of their own, Fez. Their running game, if their running game was a fight, they would have stopped it. Versus the Eagles, they managed a grand total of 64 rushing yards, like 2.5 yards per carry. You know, I don't want to say they're in trouble, but I think they worked out Dan Dorning this week. Be that as it may, the game is going to be on Russell Wilson's back. And you got to give Green Bay's defense a little credit. The last 6 weeks, they've ranked second in points allowed per game and first in interceptions. So will they do enough to, quote, badger Russell Wilson? See what I did there? They're going to badger Russell Wilson. All right, you take the floor.
Yeah, Wisconsin, a player. The floor is, let's talk about the rushing for Seattle, because how do you beat Green Bay? You mentioned, well, you shut down Green Bay's running back, but you also just go ahead and run right through Green Bay. We saw San Francisco maul Green Bay on the ground. We saw the Chargers run right through them as well. Punch them in the mouth, run between the Smith brothers rushing the passer, and you'll be just fine. Seattle's not going to be able to do that. So their number four running back, Homer, or their number five running back, Lynch, I don't care. Carroll says Lynch is going to play more. Both of these guys averaged one yard per carry last week. The only reason they averaged 2.5 for a team, because Russell Wilson wound up running the ball. So with running backs that should be more effective than last week, but ineffective overall, they're not going to be able to take advantage of Green Bay's biggest weakness on defense. I will say this. This is the second of my prop bet best bets.
Go ahead.
If Homer can't run the ball well, and if Lynch can't run the ball well, and Seattle's going to get 80 yards rushing, which wouldn't be very good, who's going to get that? Well, it's going to be Russell Wilson, because Wilson's running the ball more. We saw him go for 50 yards last week, and year-to-date, he only averaged 21 yards. So the bookies, the dastardly bookies, did not do their homework enough. They set this number way too low. It's currently at 28. I'm going Russell Wilson rush yards over 28. He's got to make up for the backup running backs. Wilson over for his rush yards.
Will you be possibly playing any prop bets involving Homer? I mean, we could perhaps refer to that as Homer's Odyssey.
I would only fade Homer because I take Pete Carroll at his word,
right,
when he was saying, hey, yeah, I'm trying to think of a Homer Odyssey joke, but it's going to be more like a Cyclops. Maybe he'll put up a big one eye for carries when Lynch gets more of the carries. I don't think it really matters overall, but I trust Pete Carroll. He says Lynch is getting more work this week.
Yeah, I think they have to. They're trying to turn back the clock, but why not? He's got fresh legs. I would just say this. There's one factoid, and it's an oddball one, about the Seattle Seahawks since 2012, so it's not a short sample. They've been notoriously slow starters in road playoff games. First half average points, 5.6. Rush yards per game, 49. Third down percentage, 34.2%. Pete Carroll cannot afford to dig a hole. But I got to tell you, Fez, because you've been talking about Green Bay for weeks, and the fact is, frankly, they are an overrated team, if there's such a thing, when you're 13-3.
Yeah, both teams are overrated. I just feel Seattle is more overrated because Seattle's 11-2 in close games. Pursuant to the slow start, I know R.J. Bell and myself, we like the first half to go under 23 points in this game. I do want to mention R.J. in the Houston-Kansas City game loves the over in Houston-Kansas City.
10 seconds. Reiterate your two prop bets tomorrow because you're really good at that. As a matter of fact, our Super Bowl show in about 2 weeks was awesome last year. It'll be good again this year.
Green Bay wide receiver Devontae Adams to go over 83 reception yards. Russell Wilson of Seattle to go over 28 rush yards.
All right, my best bet tomorrow, we haven't talked about this at all. It involves the total in the Green Bay-Seattle game. I like the under of 45.5 now. By the way, all six playoff games have gone under. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but I do like the Seattle Green Bay under. Okay, folks, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Straight Out of Vegas. He's Steve Fezzik. I'm Bernie Fratto. Next up, the man from Nashville. He brings it strong. It's time for the Jason Martin Show.
Straight Out of Vegas!